If you speak only one language, chances are you listen with admiration and perhaps even a little envy as others move effortlessly from one to another. Beyond just having skill and pleasure being bilingual or multilingual, there's the sense that language-advantaged people have bigger or better brains somehow, because we know learning languages is hard. Today on Please Explain, we're going to discuss, mostly in English, about why it is so difficult for adults to learn other languages and some strategies for overcoming those difficulties. And our guide is Catherine B. Nielsen. She is currently the Chief Education Officer at Voxy, an education technology company in New York City. And we invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Or leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also join in on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Catherine, does the brain function in the same way whether we're acquiring language as children as opposed to actively setting about to learn a language, a second language?
It absolutely does not. When we learn a language as children, we mostly learn implicitly, which means we learn from the world around us without having any explicit instruction in how to learn a language. When we learn languages as adults, we don't have those same implicit mechanisms to rely on anymore, and so we need to use more explicit instruction. We also have a lot less time as adults to learn a language.
How do infants first begin to distinguish the meanings of words from all the other sounds that they're hearing?
They begin to distinguish the meanings of words when they need them. So infants are very motivated to understand words because we all as humans have a need to communicate. And so infants are looking at their caregivers and seeing things that they want and understanding that when they scream, they don't always get what they want. They get what someone thinks that they want. And so they're very motivated to figure out what things are called. And they spend years doing it, just watching people and trying to understand what they're saying.
When have most of us fully acquired our native language? By what age are we more or less fluent and only adding vocabulary and nuance?
I would say that most people are probably fluent by the time they're 5 or 6 years old. And then what they're doing is adding vocabulary and adding nuance.
What's different for children who are learning more than one language from the day they're born?
Children who learn more than one language at once, who, for example, have one parent who speaks to them in one language and another parent who uses another language, actually learn both of them at the same time as one big system.
And but then they have to separate out the words, don't they? And the sentence structures?
They're not thinking about separating out the words and sentence structures because what children are doing is learning implicitly. And in fact, if you ask children to describe how language works, they often can't do it. Or if you ask an adult who's never really thought about how language works, they can't do it either. They don't have words for nouns or verbs or adjectives or the word order that you put things in. And it's because those are things that we use to describe how a language works. And that's what happens when we try to teach people languages largely incorrectly. We try to teach them the system of how the language works, but that's not how language learning actually happens.
Well, kids instinctively learn the whole structure of a language, which can be very different if you're learning Japanese, if you're learning Hindi, if you're learning German, if you're learning English, Spanish.
Yes, the structures of all the languages are very different, and children do learn those structures implicitly.
Does learning a second language early or later change the structure of our brains?
I would say that the brain changes over time, and there's something called neuroplasticity that refers more or less to the flexibility of the brain, and children's brains are more flexible than adult brains. So there's something that's referred to as the critical period for language acquisition, and exactly what the boundaries of the critical period are aren't known precisely, but it starts somewhere around the age of 5, and it goes somewhere up to 13 or 14. And there comes a point after which you don't learn your second language as well as you would learn your first language.
And you don't pronounce words as well. People who learn a second language, immigrant children, speak English, for example, without an accent. But then if they're a little older, as we saw with Henry Kissinger, he has always spoken with a German accent, even though he came here when he was 12 or 13.
Phonology, people think, which is the sound, how the sound, the system of the sounds of language and how language sounds work, is one of the first pieces to be affected by the critical period. So if you start to learn a language after a certain age, you may never acquire native-like phonology. Little babies, when they're first born, can understand and make and differentiate all of the sounds in the world, but then it gets limited to the subset of sounds in their first languages, and that's something that's very difficult for people people to overcome after a certain point.
We tend to teach a second language in our schools, junior high school or high school. Is that a good idea? Should we be teaching it to kids in the first and second grade?
We should be teaching language, yes, in the first or second grade, and we should be doing it regularly. And we should do it in different ways. So what happens in junior high school and high school is we set about teaching language as object. We start with verb charts, and we teach people how to conjugate things, and we teach them to memorize rules. And what you often find happens is those same people then go abroad, and they realize, I don't know how to say anything. Nothing I learned prepared me to do anything with this language. Well, and so what we know about how children learn and adults learn is that you really need to start with what people want to be able to do in the language.
And I can't tell you how many times I've had this conversation. I studied French, I studied Spanish, I studied German, whatever, for 4 or 5 years, and now I can't speak it at all. A listener wondered about the other problem. Okay, so you may even understand a language in theory, but then when you go to another country and somebody talks to you in that language, you have to construct a sentence in response.
Exactly. That's what we refer to as output or production, and it's a really important part of learning a language. You can spend all of your time focusing on the receptive skills and just being able to listen and understand, but if you don't practice speaking a language or using a language, you'll never be able to do it. One of the things that's really important to keep in mind is that language is a skill, and it doesn't work the way other content areas work. It's not like science or social studies where you memorize something in a book and then you know it on a test. With a language, you actually have to be able to understand someone speaking to you, and then you need to be able to respond to them.
But most of us do just memorize a few things. When I travel abroad, I try to pick up at least a few key phrases. Hello, thank you, where's the bathroom, things like that. Is learning these things the first key step, or because they represent universal needs and courtesies?
Yes, and universal needs is an interesting thing to point out, because we find that the best language instruction works when it's needs-based, when people can see right away that the words they're learning and the phrases they've picked up will help them, and it will give them building blocks to learning more pieces of language. So yes, learning things like please and thank you and where's the bathroom and how do I find this thing will give you the stepping stones to being able to learn more language.
Some people say English is a fairly easy language to learn because its structures are fairly simple. Others have a hard time with it because pronunciation is so confusing. But English words don't have genders, whereas many other languages do. And the gender assignment to something like a table or a chair or a clock doesn't really make much sense. It's just something you have to know.
That's true. I would say that the difficulty of a language depends upon the language that the learner has learned first. So some languages will be very hard for native English speakers because they will have things like gender that English doesn't have. But English has things like articles that other languages don't have. And if you come from a language that doesn't use definite and indefinite articles, a, the, an, it's very difficult to figure out where they go in English.
Even people who speak the same language sometimes don't understand what's going on. An old friend of mine started a restaurant called Rosa Mexicano, and people would come in and say, how can you open a Mexican restaurant and not even know how to speak Spanish? Well, Rosa Mexicano is correct. It actually is Mexican pink, not Mexican rose. And pink color is masculine, so you have to say Rosa Mexicano.
That's true.
It can really get confusing, and even in a simple language like Spanish.
One thing that people love to do is point out when others are making mistakes with their languages.
A listener wrote in saying they had this experience living in Italy. I learned a few key phrases in Italian, which I would use when I met people. The problem was was understanding when they talked back to me. Do you just have to do that over and over again until it becomes increasingly clear, the person wonders?
Yes. What you need to do is practice listening to conversations that people are having. The secret to language learning is practice and paying attention and getting lots of real world input. So if you want to understand what people are saying to you when you give them the phrases you've memorized, you need to get lots of examples of people responding to those phrases.
My guest is Catherine B. Nielsen. She is currently chief education officer at Voxy, which is an education technology company in New York. We're talking about learning a foreign language, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And I am Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Let's take a call from a listener who wants to talk about this, Corinne from Edgewood, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Love the show. I'm fascinated by this topic. And just a very brief background, my husband and I lived in China for 6 years. We both speak Chinese. He didn't start learning until he was 21, but he is fluent. However, I had lived in Hong Kong as a child where I got exposure to Mandarin at 7. And so even though my fluency is not as good as my husband's, people often mistake me for a Chinese person on the phone because of the quality of the pronunciation that I produce. So my first question is, you know, is that the case because I had early exposure that my pronunciation is near native? Second question is about children. My children have a Chinese nanny who does not speak English and only speaks to them in Mandarin. They're 2 and, 4 months.
Now, I have a question for you along these lines. You grew up in Hong Kong where the language is actually Cantonese, not Mandarin. So are you confused? They're 2 different languages.
No. They were preparing for the takeover. This was in the early 90s. The Chinese were going to take over Hong Kong in 97, so they started teaching Mandarin in the school system.
Okay, well, anyway, what is the question again?
Did early exposure improve my pronunciation as an adult when I returned to the study of the language? And then for children, my daughter is learning Chinese and English at the same time. Will that delay her English speech, or will she progress equally in both? How does that affect such a young child when they're learning 2 such different languages at once?
Those are great questions. So first of all, your pronunciation was definitely affected by learning Chinese when you were young. As I think I mentioned earlier in the segment, phonology or the system of sounds is something that works really well when you're young and is much more difficult to acquire as you get old. If you think about a critical period of language learning, one of the first things to be affected by that period is phonology. As for your daughter, I think what you'll notice is that she will be slower at learning both English and Chinese than monolingual children. But if you continue the exposure to both languages as she grows and she gets instruction in both, then eventually she'll catch up. The research on children who learn 2 languages at once because they have caregivers who speak 2 different languages do eventually catch up to monolingual children.
Thank you so much for your call. Go ahead.
Thank you. Any age on that? Is it maybe 5, you see a breakthrough, 7? How long does it have to be sustained to really see the benefits where they're equally fluent in both?
That really depends on the child and on the circumstances and on how often she's hearing Chinese and how often she's using Chinese and what language she goes to school in. Those studies that I'm referring to typically look at children who are in bilingual schools through elementary school. So you would see it towards the end of elementary school, the catching up.
Now, Chinese languages are all structured quite differently than English language as well. They're not just learning the vocabulary and not just learning how to talk in a version of English. They actually have to learn something totally different. There are certain languages that are more difficult to learn, certain languages that are easier to learn if you're an English speaker.
If you're an English speaker, there are definitely languages that are more difficult to learn. So languages that don't use the Roman alphabet are more difficult to learn because you need to learn a different writing system.
Japanese, Arabic, Chinese, of course.
Yes. Languages that
Hindi.
And languages that use tones, for example, Chinese, are more difficult because we don't have tones in English. So that means that a word that would to a native English speaker sound the same, a word like ma in Chinese, because you can apply a number of different tones to it to completely change the meaning of the word. So those are characteristics of Chinese that we don't have in English that make Chinese more difficult to learn for native English speakers.
We all learn differently. For some people, it's from a workbook. For others, it's by listening. Others learn by doing. How do you know which kind of language learner you are?
I would say that we all learn differently and people have different preferences when it comes to learning. But for language learning from a workbook is not really going to work because learning a language is learning a skill. You have to practice it and you have to be in uncomfortable situations. One of the problems with language learning is that people don't go into it with the right expectations. They want to memorize a list of words and then be able to speak the language. In reality, you need to start listening to people using the language and notice words and notice lots of things you don't know and do it over and over again until you're able to do it.
Do you like programs like Rosetta Stone or apps like Duolingo?
I would say that neither of those is a complete solution to learning a language, that you're not going to learn a language from playing a game, and you're not going to learn a language by learning a bunch of vocabulary words. One of the keys to language learning is focusing on the real tasks you want to be able to accomplish and also having enough real-world input. So you need actual conversations that people have, not the kind of dialogue you find in a textbook.
So immersion is probably the best. But if I want to learn French, I can't just take 6 months off and move to Paris.
No, but what you could do is find a French teacher to work with you here who would give you, as you are learning materials, videos in French, starting with commercials in French, because those are typically shorter and easy to understand with visual support, who would find out what do you want to be able to do in French, and then let you read dialogues that are recorded from real people doing those same things in French.
Isn't that what the old Berlitz system tried to do?
Most traditional language learning systems are what we would say are one size fits all, where you start with the concept that everyone is going to learn this language the same way. The first words I need to teach you are book and ball and girl and milk and table. And what that's going to do is prepare you to be able to probably do nothing that you need to be able to do.
My grandmother has a pen.
Exactly. Or the butterfly is drinking the milk. Sometimes you'll see sentences that make absolutely no sense at all. And what we should do is start with what a real person is going to say in France, if that's where you're going, when he or she is going to order coffee in a coffee shop or buy a train ticket or go to a business meeting.
One of my producers told me that he learned a fair amount of German by watching bad German soap operas. I'm guessing if you're watching media on foreign language now, you're trying to learn, you might actually want the acting to be as over the top as possible.
That's interesting. I think what you want is to pay attention. So much of learning a language is paying attention to what's going on, and it needs to be motivating. And so if your producer thought that the German soap opera was interesting, then already he's going to be in a better place to understand what's happening than if he's watching a boring video about something that holds no interest for him at all.
What about watching movies with subtitles?
Subtitles are interesting.
But you need split brain to really learn, don't you?
You don't need split brain. What we know about subtitles is that reading takes over. And that's why when you're watching a film in a foreign language with English subtitles, you forget a few minutes into it that the film is foreign and you just are paying attention to what's going on because you're just reading. So that can be an advantage with language learning. But it means you should put the subtitles in the language you're learning. So you should watch a foreign film and put subtitles in the target language.
Somebody was wondering about learning a language like programming. Is the process the same for learning something like that as it is for learning a foreign language?
For learning a natural language? Well, programming languages are invented by people to accomplish a task, and they are not as robust as the types of languages that humans have been developing over time to get through the day. I would say that there are some similarities involved. The programming language you use to accomplish things, and it probably works best when you are using it to learn rather than trying to study it from a book first.
My guest is Catherine B. Nielsen. She is currently the Chief Education Officer at Voxy, an education technology company in New York. We are taking your calls. We will be after we take a little break. 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopatin. We'll be back with you right after this. We're talking about learning a language as an adult on today's Please Explain. My guest is Catherine B. Nielsen, the Chief Education Officer at Voxy, which is an education technology company in New York. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Jeff from Park Slope, you're on the air.
Hi there. Actually, before I get into the comment I the question I had, I just want to make another comment about looking at media to learn a language. I find watching news reports, like if I'm trying to work on my Italian, watching the Italian news, because I love the news and I know the context and they have pictures. So it's a great way to train your ear and pick up some vocabulary.
So you learn how to say Syria in a foreign language?
Yeah, and how to make fun of our government in several languages. But the question I had was, is there a connection between a person's musical, innate musical ability, their talent or, whatever musical talent someone may have, and the ability to learn languages? I'm a self-taught musician. I can pick up instruments pretty easily. My wife isn't so musical, and she struggles with languages. I pick up languages easily. So I'm wondering if there's some, neurological connection between the kind of centers of your brain that process those things, those two things.
First of all, I love the comment about using the news to learn. And what you pointed out was that the context was relevant to you and you were interested in it. And so it was easy for you to learn the words and follow what was going on. And that's something that I've been trying to illustrate through this whole chat, which is that you need to start with stuff that's interesting to you or else you're going to be fighting an uphill battle with language learning. As far as the music and the language being related to each other, there definitely is research to suggest that an aptitude for music and an aptitude for language are linked. One of the things that I think that's really important to point out, though, is that everybody can learn a language. Some people have a better aptitude for language learning, and some people do better with different types of instruction. And there's a lot of recent research on what's called aptitude-treatment interaction, which basically means if we take what we know about how your brain works and we teach you the right way, you will be able to learn better.
My father was tone deaf. He was very good with languages. I used to sing professionally, and I'm very bad with languages.
So we have an anecdote right here that counteracts the situation that you have.
But I would think actors would be good with languages because they're already thinking in terms of sounds and what words mean.
Well, when actors think about sounds, actors are people often who can imitate accents, or you'll hear a British actor doing an American accent and you won't ever notice that he or she is not American. And that sort of ties in with the whole talk about phonology that we had earlier, which is that might be something separate that's going on. Being able to sound native-like in a language might have less to do with learning the language itself and more to do with your ability to imitate sounds.
Alejandro, hi, you're on the air. Alejandro from Riverdale.
Thanks for taking my call. Leonard, love the show. I know the topic is learning languages as adults, but I had a question related to children. I was wondering, when a child shows early signs of, like, speech delays, would it be advantageous to introduce them to a second language, or does the research show a better deal just keeping them in a monolingual setting?
I think there can be a variety of reasons for a speech delay, and so it's not necessarily bad to introduce another language. But it's also, we've also seen that children who learn two languages at once tend to be slower at learning both of them. So if your child is already slow at learning one, then it would follow that introducing another one might complicate things.
That's what I suspected.
Okay, thank you for calling us.
Thank you.
And we go now to Todd from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Leonard. We actually worked together many years ago when I was a producer at WNYC TV. So I just had
it no longer exists.
I know it no longer exists. It was a long time ago. So I actually learned French very well when I was a teenager. I went on to live in Montreal. I've been back for over 30 years, and I speak it fluently. And like an earlier listener, I'm also lucky to be very gifted in music. But I have some observations to make about learning language as an adult for those people for whom learning languages is a bit difficult. The first thing is find a radio station or a TV station on the web. Let it play in the background and just let the music, as it were, of that language flow into you. Try not to worry about whether or not you can specifically identify or understand certain words or phrases. It's amazing how much the brain can kind of begin to understand on its own. That's the first thing. The second thing is McGraw-Hill has a series called Teach Yourself, which I find to be very effective in learning language as much the way your guest has been proposing about actually learning useful language. And then later on, it delves into language structure. And thirdly is you have to be willing to make mistakes when you're learning a language. It's absolutely essential. If you're afraid of being in a foreign country and people are going to mock you for not pronouncing well or conjugating well, you are never going to learn.
That's a very good point. And it's one of the things that I mentioned earlier when I said that we need to set the context for language learning. It is a complicated thing. It takes many, many years to master. And you have to make mistakes in order to learn. If you're not making mistakes, then you aren't learning.
On the other hand, I'm not sure I agree with that thing about listening to the sounds of the language. I lived in Chinatown for 25 years. I learned about 10 phrases by rote, and that was the only way that I could ever learn them. The language just is too different from English.
It might help you if you're trying to learn pronunciation. If you listen to the sounds and you're focusing only on the sounds but not what the words mean. But you need to have some footholds for all of that input that's streaming in to make sense. You need to be trying to pick out a word or listening for a purpose.
Emma from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for accepting my call. So I'm a teacher in the Bronx, and I teach students that are what is called students of interrupted formal education. And a lot of them come to us from Spanish-speaking countries but move into the neighborhood that they teach in the Bronx really feeling very comfortable in their surroundings because they have a lot of friends or family members who also speak Spanish. So my question is, how can I motivate students more to learn how to speak English when it's something that they're mandated to do in basically a year?
New York is particularly difficult in this regard because we have neighborhoods where you can get by in any number of different languages other than English.
Absolutely.
Right. And motivation is an important part of getting people to learn. If they're not motivated to learn, then it's impossible to get them to do it. I would say that you should try to find things that they'll be able to do in English that will make their lives better really immediately. When people can see immediate consequences or immediate reactions to their learning English, they're more motivated to go ahead and do it.
Megan on Twitter wrote in to say, when I went to Paris, the only French I truly needed was help, my friend fainted on the metro. And she said, I never learned that in class.
Exactly.
So there are all sorts of, I mean, we, as you were pointing out earlier, there are those things that they teach you in school, and then there are the things that you really need when you're just going around and trying to live a normal life. But there are things that you can memorize. You can memorize the kinds of things you need to say to waiters or to people when you want to buy a ticket to the train or the bus.
Exactly. And the point is that you should be learning those things when you actually know what you want to be able to say. So if you want to buy a ticket for the bus, you should make sure that you've listened to somebody buying a bus ticket so you know how people buy bus tickets rather than looking at what someone who wrote a textbook said somebody says when they're trying to buy a bus ticket.
Let's take another call. This is from Beatrice from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I was lucky enough as a child to have two parents who spoke different languages. My father was from Argentina, my mom's from Germany. So they spoke to me in their languages. Then I subsequently lived 9 years in Argentina, and I spent every summer in Germany. And I'm fluent in both, mainly because I had that experiential exposure to the language. I have a 5-year-old daughter now, and my husband only speaks English. I've been speaking to her only Spanish at birth. Her grandmother speaks German, and now we're starting with French. Is there ever too much? Is one of my questions. And is there a genetic predisposition? Has research ever found that there's a genetic predisposition to learning languages?
Research has found that there are people who have aptitudes for language learning, making language learning easier for some than for others. When you're talking about a child, though, every human can learn a language and every child learns a language because the children are learning implicitly. So if your child consistently hears Spanish from you and English from your husband and German from the grandmother, then the child will learn all three of those languages at once.
Now, people who don't use a language consistently, wind up just stuck with a kind of a bare bones version. I've spoken to any number of people who came from another country but speak English all the time, and then when they go back home, they find themselves stuck in kind of teenage language at best.
Exactly. It's because language is a skill, and it's a skill that requires practice and constant reinforcement. And so if they go back home and they stay there for a number of years or months and start using the language again, the language will get better and they'll improve. But it's something that you have to use it or you'll lose it.
And languages are constantly changing as well. And unless you keep up with them, you won't know the latest slang. You won't know the latest popular usage.
That's true. Vocabulary does change, though the structure of languages typically stays the same, at least over a normal human's lifespan.
Sarah in Argentina left a comment saying, the most frustrating thing about learning a new language is getting to a certain level of fluency and then realizing how many idiomatic expressions and cultural references you don't know.
It's very frustrating. And the only way around that is to keep putting yourselves in situations where you hear idiomatic expressions and over time learn what they mean.
Julia from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So I'm a native English speaker, but I've become in the past 3 years fluent in Spanish. I was told that if I wanted to learn a third language, so a second non-native language, it made a lot of sense to learn that third language in Spanish, that is, in my non-native language, to sort of reinforce what I knew of that second language. I want to know if there's any sort of scientific basis to that or anything that sort of upholds that idea.
So you're saying buy yourself a textbook for Portuguese or French or German that's intended for native Spanish speakers?
No, I'm saying sort of take classes, say if I wanted to learn Portuguese, take classes in Spanish to learn Portuguese.
I think what you want to do is just take classes in Portuguese. And one of the things about learning a language is that you shouldn't use any other language. You should limit the English or the Spanish that you have in your Portuguese class as much as possible.
But don't people who speak Spanish or Italian have an advantage in learning one of the other Romance languages?
Yes, because they're much closer to each other. And, I mean, you could probably say the same thing for somebody who's an English speaker learning Dutch. Those languages are closer to each other.
So is Dutch one of the easiest languages for English speakers to learn?
I don't know if I would say that Dutch is one of the easiest languages. I would say that learning
we
Dutch
have to learn how to say huh.
is easier than learning to speak Chinese, certainly. And that you should try to eliminate the other language when you're learning a new language. You don't want to have a class in Spanish to learn Portuguese. You just want to have a class in Portuguese.
Connie from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about plateauing. I've been taking French for about 13 years on and off through school and then through college, and then I kind of faded and focused on my regular degree, and that was away from French. Now I'm taking French in an adult class just to kind of refresh, and I feel as though I can't really bridge the gap with my grammar. And I was wondering, aside from media or sitting and listening to movies, because I want to interact, and I was wondering if you had any tips on how to keep up or really kind of solidify the grammar with exposing yourself and forcing yourself to interact rather than just sitting and watching, say, commercials or cartoons or movies.
Well, when you force yourself to interact, you're going to notice where there are gaps in your French better than when you're watching movies, because you're going to find yourself in a situation where there's something that you want to say but can't say. And then the grammar will come into play because you want to say something that might happen in the future and you realize that you don't know how to say that. And so that's going to help underscore for you where those problems are, so then you can focus on figuring out the French you need to bridge those gaps.
Is it ever okay to slip into English?
I mean, it's always okay to slip into English, but you should try not to.
I've heard people say that they've been able to think. They haven't been able to think in the second language. They've learned the language, but they always are engaged in translating rather than just simply falling into the language usage. How do you get past that?
You practice. And you try to find a teaching methodology that does not rely on translation, because that's what people do anyway. So you should try to keep all of the instruction in the language, or as much as possible, in the language that you're learning. And then you should reach for phrases that you've already understood the meaning of, rather than trying to think of something in English and then translate into a new language.
So in French, you just keep on saying n'est-ce pas?
Well, you try to find some more phrases and you listen to some more French. But what you want to try to do is learn how those phrases map to tasks that you want to accomplish, or how words map to images or concepts, rather than putting English in between. It's going to help with the translation problem.
We've been talking about learning a foreign language as an adult with Catherine B. Nielsen, the Chief Education Officer at Voxy, an education technology company in New York City. Thank you so much.
Thank you.